Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
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 So today we're reading from 1:2, chapter 3. Pure devotion of service, the change in the heart. Text number 21.
Varaha
Varam Kurita
Jishtam
Api
Uttama
Angam
Na
Amit
Mukundam
Shabau
Kara
Na
Kurde,
Sipariyam,
Rehe,
Lasat,
Kanchana,
Kankanao,
Va,
Parayaparam Patakuriti Dushtam, Aputamangam Nanamin Mukundam, Shavavarana Kurte Sapariyam
Shavavarana Kurte Sapariyam
Harinasa Kanchana Kankanova
Harinasa Kankanova
Paraparam Patakari Tidusham
Paraparam Patakari Tidusham
Aphyutamangam Nanamin Mukundam
Aphyutamangam Nanamin
Shavavarana no kurte sapariyam
Shavavarana kurte sapariyam
Harilasa kanchana kankanova
Harilasa kanchana
kankanova Paravaram pasankariti jushtam
Paravaram
pasankariti jushtam Aphyutamangam nanamin mukundam
Aphyutamangam nanamin mukundam
Shavavarana no kurte sapariyam
Shavavarana
kurte sapariyam Harilasa kanchana kankanova
Harilasa kanchana
kankanova Varaha
Varaha
a great
burden
Param
Param
heavy
Pata
Pata
silk
Kurita
Kurita
turban
Jushtam
Jushtam Dressed with. Api.
Api.
Even.
Uttama.
Api.
Api.
Angam.
Angam.
Parts of the body.
Parts of the body.
Na.
Na.
Never.
Never.
Namet.
Namet.
Bow down.
Bow down.
Mukundam.
Mukundam.
Lord Krishna, the deliverer. Shabau.
Dead bodies.
Karau.
Karau.
Hands.
Hands.
No.
No.
Do not.
Do not.
Kurute.
Kurute.
Do.
Do.
Sapariyam.
Sapariyam.
Worshipping.
Worshipping.
Hare.
Hare.
Of the personality of Godhead.
Of the personality of Godhead.
Lasat.
Lasat.
Glittering.
Glittering.
Kanchana.
Kanchana.
Made of gold.
Gold.
Kankanao.
Kankanao.
Bangles.
Bangles.
Va.
Va.
Even though.
Even though.
Translation and purport by Sabhan Gresha A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Maharaj Ki. Translation. The upper portion of the body, though crowned with a silk turban, is only a heavy burden if not bowed down before the personality of Godhead, who can award mukti, or freedom. And the hands, though decorated with glittering bangles, are like those of a dead man if not engaged in the service of the personality of Godhead, Hari. As stated here and before, there are three kinds of devotees of the Lord. The first class devotee does not at all see anyone who is not in the service of the Lord, but the second class devotee makes distinctions between devotees and non-devotees. The second class devotees are therefore meant for preaching work, and as referred to in the above verse, they must loudly preach the glories of the Lord. The second class devotee accepts disciples from the second section of third class devotees or non-devotees. Sometimes the first class devotee also comes down to the category of the second class devotee for preaching work. But the common man, who is expected to become at least a third class devotee, is advised herein to visit the temple of the Lord and bow down before the deity, even though he may be a very rich man or even a king with a silk turban or crown. The Lord is the Lord of everyone, including the great kings and emperors, and men who are rich in estimation of mundane people must therefore make it a point to visit the temple of Lord Sri Krishna and regularly bow down before the deity. The Lord in the temple, in the worshipful form, is never to be considered to be made of stone or wood, for the Lord in his Arch incarnation as the deity in the temple shows immense favour to the fallen souls by his auspicious presence. By the hearing process, as mentioned herein before, this realisation of the presence of the Lord in the temple is made possible. As such, the first process in the routine work of devotional service, hearing, is the essential point. Hearing by all classes of devotees from the authentic sources like Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam is essential. The common man who is puffed up with his material position and does not bow down before the deity of the Lord in the temple, or who defies temple worship without any knowledge of the science, must know that his so-called turban or crown will only succeed in further drowning him in the water of the ocean of material existence. A drowning man with a heavy weight on his head is sure to go down more swiftly than those who have no heavy weight. A foolish, puffed up man defies the science of God and says that God has no meaning for him. But when he is in the grip of God's law and is caught by some disease like cerebral thrombosis, that godless man sinks into the ocean of nescience by the ways of his material acquisition. Advancement of material science without God consciousness is a heavy load on the head of human society, and so one must take heed of this great warning. The common man, if he has no time to worship the Lord, may at least engage his hands for a few seconds in washing or sweeping the Lord's temple. Maharaj Pratapa Rudra, the great and powerful king of Orissa, was always very busy with heavy state responsibilities. Yet he made it a point to sweep the temple of Lord Jagannath at Puri once a year during the festival of the Lord. The idea is that however important a man one may be, he must accept the supremacy of the Supreme Lord. This God consciousness will help a man even in his material prosperity. Maharaj Pratapa Rudra's subordination before Lord Jagannath made him a powerful king, so much so that even the great Pathan in his time could not enter into Orissa on account of the powerful Maharaj Pratapa Rudra. And at last Maharaj Pratapa Rudra was graced by Lord Sri Chaitanya on the very ground of his acceptance of subordination to the Lord of the universe. So even though a rich man's wife has glittering bangles made of gold on her hands, she must engage herself in rendering service to the Lord. So, continuing some verses spoken by Shaunika Rishi in the Assembly of the Sages at Nameshwaranya. And as devotees have mentioned, he's being very critical of materialists or non-devotees who have no interest in the Lord, who don't approach the Lord. Even Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, even people that approach the Lord for something other than to serve Him, but for their own material gain, even they are magnanimous souls. So this is the direction of Srimad Bhagavatam, that whatever our desires are, we should approach the Supreme Lord. And now this verse in, as Keshe was mentioning, this series of verses and this section of Srimad Bhagavatam is quite significant. And Srila Prabhupada also lectured on this verse in June of 1972 in Los Angeles. So, of course, when we're trying to teach on Srimad Bhagavatam, then we must give our own realizations from if we're engaged in service, and Krishna gives us realizations, and so we must supplement our teaching with these. But the main substance of our teaching is derived from the previous acharyas. So even if Prabhupada, mostly his lectures are on first and second canto, seventh, not so much even on tenth canto, but of course he always was describing Krishna's pastimes. So even if Prabhupada hasn't lectured on a particular verse, then we can see in that purport what are the main ideas being presented, and perhaps somewhere else he has spoke about that topic in a lecture, or we should see what have the previous acharyas said about this topic, and then that's the framework for what we teach people, and then we expand with what have we realized personally about these topics. So rather than trying to guess what can I say about this verse, what can I speculate, so in this lecture that I was reading, so the monarchies, or the kings, the royal order, they're even much more than today, they were known for having very opulent dress, and in the same way that the pujaris dress the deity, and of course Jagannath is famous for his turbans. So the kings and the royal order, the princes, they would also have very opulent turbans, and it says here made of silk, kirita. And so Prabhupada is making the point that this material opulence that a royal order, that someone in the royal order might have, then it's fine, it's good, as long as it's bowed down before the deity. So being part and parcel of Krishna, then every living entity, all of us have some small opulence, some opulence or attractiveness in our personality, and opulence means either we have it in abundance, like we're just overflowing with this characteristic, or some extravagant feature or attractive feature. Sometimes we say that someone cooks breakfast for Krishna, and we say, oh wow, this sabji is so opulent. And what we're meaning is that maybe they've used very expensive ingredients, and I kind of run, oh no, what did they put in the sabji? Or they may, Adrian used to tell me, look, if you don't lock the cupboard, then someone will make halva out of almond meal. So this is what opulence is. We're very rich and using a lot of, going to a lot of expense to in our endeavours. So we all have something like that, where we're in our personality, we've got, there's people that are very friendly, people that have more beauty than others, and people that are wealthy, people that are very knowledgeable. So this is, according to our karma, we get some opulence. And Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Yaja vibhuti mat sabam shimad ujitam eva taptar eva gachatam amate jom shat sambhava. So all these opulences are, he says, spring from but a spark of my splendor. So these are all just little, you know, the living entities are compared to sparks from the fire. So this little, each little spark has a bit of Krishna's splendor. And in this, Prabhupada describes that anything we see that's extraordinarily opulent should be considered to represent Krishna's opulence. And for devotees, we also get spiritual opulence. Krishna is also the source of spiritual opulences. And so for these, this is, you know, Brahmacharis get a lot of this, we get so much spiritual opulence. Meaning, you know, we can attend morning program every day if we don't have service, and also other devotees, we get the association of devotees and we get to render service at the temple or engage in outreach service. So these are spiritual opulences that Krishna gives us. And Krishna is full in all six opulences of, as we know, wealth and beauty, strength, knowledge, renunciation and fame. So, renunciation is not usually on the first thing that comes to mind when we think of opulence, but if someone, you know, like the great yogis, they try to give up the world and just focus on becoming one with Brahman. So if a very worldly person sees that, they see someone's just, you know, turn their back on the world, they consider that very you know, opulent, or amazing. So Krishna has all of the opulences, and it's been described in this verse that we have to, you know, recognize what is the source of our opulence and then engage these in executing his will, Prabhupada says. So that means the will of Krishna, basically to help people become Krishna conscious. And so then there's no harm in having opulence. We don't have to change our position. Everyone, we're situated in this world according to our past activities. And so maybe it happened that in this life where, you know, we happen to be a rich businessman. So Prabhupada's saying that's no problem, you don't have to artificially renounce your big job. But you just have to understand that you were given this power by Krishna. And even for devotees, perhaps as we go along in our Krishna consciousness, then Krishna will give us more responsibility for serving him. You know, this year, previously I was already helping a lot with the catering, and then and that position, or the job of being the catering manager, became vacant, so there wasn't really anyone else to do it. And that's, in this kind of, Kadamakana Swami was saying then, you know, after 3 weeks you're the kitchen manager, so it's not so hard to, if someone actually wants some position, then it can come quite easily. This Congress, the devotees are spread quite thinly. So it's not such a big thing to, you know, you get some responsibility. But as Prabhupada's stressing, we have to recognize that it's given by Krishna and we have to use that to serve Krishna. and not serve our own sense gratification. He gives the example of Ravana, who was very materially opulent in his kingdom. His kingdom was, I think, maybe his palace was all made of gold. And in another lecture, Prabhupada says there was a like a tunnel going from Sri Lanka to Brazil, and they would get the gold from Brazil, import it or transport it through this underground tunnel from Brazil to Sri Lanka, and that's how we got so wealthy. So Ravana, he wanted, as Prabhupada describes, he wasn't interested in Krishna, but he was interested in Sita, which is the energy, spiritual energy of Krishna. And so this is the material mentality that everything is supplied by the Lord, but we just want to enjoy his energy and not care about him. So he's Bhaktayam Yajna Tapasam, the enjoyer of all sacrifices and austerities. So even in the spiritual world, there's money and there's women in the spiritual world too, as it's described. These are the two, you know, impediments to spiritual progress, you know, wealth and women. But they're also there in the spiritual world, as Brahma says in the Brahma Samhita, that Krishna is being served very reverentially by hundreds of thousands of goddesses of fortune. And even his abode is Chintamani, made of touchstone. It will yield whatever you desire. So there is, you know, unlimited opulence in the spiritual world, and we just see a reflection of it here in the material world. But you know, in the spiritual world, the residents of Vaikuntha, they're not trying to falsely renounce their opulence. They don't think like that, but they see that this is the energy of the Lord, and it's his opulence. And they're just engaged in his service. But then that becomes perverted in the material, that instead of seeing the Lord as the enjoyer, we see ourselves as the enjoyer, or as Prabhupada says, the Purusha. And there's only one Purusha, that's Krishna. But falsely, we're thinking ourselves to be enjoyed, and instead of to be enjoyed, that's Prakriti. And so Ravana had this mentality that he just wanted to enjoy Sita for himself and, you know, forget about Krishna. And even when we come to Krishna consciousness and we associating with devotees, then there's also opulences and the energy of Krishna. We're surrounded by the energy of Krishna, and sometimes we can, you know, want to enjoy that, such as you know, every day we can have Mahaprasadam, and you know, we can just feast all day practically and not do any service. So this would also be the wrong mentality to have, that, you know, come to the temple every day and just eat and eat and not do any service. So this is also the enjoying mentality instead of the serving mentality. And of course, you know, it's to our eternal benefit to take prasadam. We always must keep this in mind to have the service attitude. Prabhupada gives the example of this, we're thinking where the joy is in the world, that if a woman dresses up as a man and tries to enjoy in the same way that a man does, then that's not possible when it's imitation. So, you know, on this side of the room, everyone's dressed as a male. On this side of the room, everyone's dressed as a female. But actually, that's just their outward dress. And the spirit soul, in its constitutional position, is Prakriti, or the one that is enjoyed. And the Supreme Lord, in any of his forms, Krishna, he's the Purusha, the male. The male enjoyer. So, as we've heard before, you know, everyone is actually female. So that's been referring to, in the spiritual sense, that materially we have a male body or a female body, but spiritually we're all constitutionally female, and Krishna is the male enjoyer. So then our position is just to give pleasure to Krishna. But of course, as Prabhupada is saying, no one is trying to become enjoyed. Everyone's trying to enjoy it. When I was doing service at Crossways, the person serving at the register will serve them or take the Lakshmi and say, yes, thank you, enjoy. And everyone, wherever, anywhere in the world, everyone kind of relates to this. Yes, yes, I am the enjoyer. Thank you, I will enjoy. And that's fine, of course, with prasadam. So if they take prasadam enough and, you know, get purified, then they will learn to enjoy actually in association with Krishna. But the enjoyment of this material world is false. It's just a an illusory thing, because it's just not our nature. And even we see in other spiritual paths or spiritual processes like Jnana Yoga and Ashtanga Yoga, then it appears that they're very elevated, or, you know, they're doing so much austerity, or they're very advanced in yoga practice. So to the common person, it looks like they're very elevated in their practice and their consciousness. But Prabhupada is saying even they, they're trying to come to the liberated position, thinking that I will become God, which means God means enjoyer. So they have the mentality that by doing this practice, this yoga or this spiritual practice, then I will become a big enjoyer. So that's the same mentality as everyone else has. So it's no better. But the bhakti yogis, the devotee doesn't want to enjoy the material world. They, you know, this is how as described in Chaitanya Charitamrita, this is how the devotee becomes peaceful. That they just have no desires. They don't want to enjoy the world. They don't have any anxiety that I have to acquire so much to enjoy. Their only anxiety is how to please Krishna. Just like this morning, I had to. Jagannath Balabh is away in India, and he tidies up the altars, get the ready altar prior to the greeting the deities at 7. So I think 7 days a week he does that. So that's just today I had to fill in for that, but I hadn't done it before. So it was like, offer the fruit to Krishna, and then you have about 15 minutes to do so much else. Go to sweep and put the deities back on the altar and put the shalagrams there. And then he has this big tray of shoes and, what is it, water pots. And he's just like, what? There's just a million different shoes and small and big. And like, actually, I used to think, oh, it must just be, you know, you just put them anywhere. You know, you couldn't actually figure out where they're meant to go. Because all the shalagrams, they have their own pair of shoes. And, for example, on one asana, for the shalagrams, there's three little shalagrams, and they each have a pair of shoes. So, you know, like Govardhan, and they have a little bit bigger shoes. And so I'm just like, oh, Bhaktisara, help me. So this is actually, you know, anxiety for Krishna. Anxiety to please Krishna, like, you know, we should be ready at 7 o'clock, we shouldn't be late for Krishna. But if it's anxiety for ourselves, then that's just material. If it's anxiety for, you know, I didn't get enough to eat, or that is a bit serious. I'm supposed to have to eat enough to do service. But if it's just anxiety that, you know, I don't like my job or need more money, then this is just material anxiety. So, as Prabhupada describes later in the lecture, that these things, we can't actually change them. So we're born in, even from the very time of our birth, our happiness and our distress is completely fixed for the whole life. It's because we made it in our previous life. Whatever we did in our previous lives, then that set of reactions has built our whole life. So nothing can be altered in this life. So Prabhupada's describing, then, if we understand this, because people are just using all of their intelligence and all of their endeavour to adjust things. But what are they trying to adjust? They can't actually change it. They can't change their karma. So if they were meant to be well off, then that's going to happen. And if they're not meant to be, then they can't change that either. So coming from maybe, you know, performable devotees, we have this mentality of, you know, we have to always adjust everything for our comfort. But it's actually not possible. That we can still carry that into our devotional service, that we're practicing devotional service, but we're still a lot of the time in anxiety about our own personal lives, our personal situation. But Prabhupada's describing that the real intelligence is to understand that, oh, my karma is fixed, my happiness and distress in this life is fixed. So instead of just using my intelligence to adjust those things, then use our intelligence to how to serve Krishna and how to advance in Krishna consciousness, advance in spiritual life. Then And then by, if Krishna desires, he can, you know, he can adjust our karma anyway. Or basically, a lot of it gets removed by practice of devotional service. And then whatever was there, Krishna can use that just to purify us. So the devotee is not in anxiety that I'm suffering so much, but they just try to serve Krishna. And Prabhupada says, what is the cure for this material disease of thinking ourselves the enjoyer? He says it's only by surrender. So practically speaking, for devotees, to surrender means to follow the orders of our Acharyas, Prabhupada, and our own spiritual master, to chant 16 rounds attentively, strictly follow 4 regular principles. This is practical surrender, and to render some service as far as much as we can. And that purification come first of all by associating with devotees. This is our whole, you know, endeavor when we're preaching, is to just somehow get people in the association of devotees so that they can hear either Bhagavad Gita or hear the Maha Mantra. And this initial purification is necessary before someone can actually engage in service. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, that no one can engage in service without being purified of sinful reactions. So just by hearing in the association of devotees, people do get purified of their sinful reactions, and then we can engage them in service. So when we're engaged in service, Prabhupada is stressing that this engagement in service has to be like an absorbing thing. Not just sometimes, but all of the time, because the good engagement of Krishna consciousness, if we're not engaged in Krishna consciousness, then we have to be engaged in serving Maya. So this is what we're learning in the association of devotees, how to more and more be engaged in the service of the Lord. And the first thing that Maharaj Ambarish engaged was his mind. So this is also very essential, that first of all we fix up our mind in serving Krishna by repeated hearing. Prabhupada says that here, that hearing by all classes of devotees is essential. So hearing is not just a activity for neophyte devotees, but for neophyte devotees, hearing purifies the soul. And for second class devotees who see the Lord as their worshipful object, then hearing gives them pleasure. They like to hear about the Lord. And for the first class devotee, then hearing about Krishna is their life and soul. So for all classes, then hearing is very important. And for neophyte devotees, then hearing will purify the mind, and we can get fixed up in our mind that, yes, I'm a servant of Krishna. I'm a servant of Krishna. And then the engagement of the other senses will automatically follow. So as Prabhupada was saying, that the legs should be engaged in coming to the temple. At the temple, our congregations ever expanding, even from when I first came to the temple, I can just see the bhakti rikshas and everything, and the uni programs have just increased the congregation very, very far. And so not everyone, of course, lives in Albert Park. It's like practically very unaffordable for most people. And St Kilda is a bit of a, not always the nicest houses there. And so some people, I think, my sister told me the other day, the state government's announced this big, big project to develop, from Werribee to Point Cook, have so much housing and whatever. So it's not always possible for people to live in the very close vicinity of the temple. But still Prabhupada is saying that we have to be these people have to engage their legs in coming to the temple. And this is where we associate, get more elevated devotee association that will help us to advance and engage in service. An example given in this verse is of King Pratapa Rudra, who had a lot of state responsibilities, but still he would clean the temple once a year. So he did some direct service. So this is what we try to get people to do. So, you know, whatever it is, just fry papadons or lakosek or sweep the temple, sweep the prasadam hall, some small direct service at the temple. Otherwise, whatever material opulence we have is of no value. And Queen Kunti also says this in first canto of Bhagavatam, that Krishna can be very easily approached, but only by those who are materially exhausted. And if people are enamored or trying to improve themselves with being in a good family or having a lot of wealth or a very good education or bodily beauty, then they cannot advance in spiritual life. Krishna also says in Bhagavad Gita that if we're bewildered by material opulence, then we cannot perform devotional service. So it's not the opulence in itself that's the problem. It's our perception of it, our conception. If we think we're the enjoyer of the opulence, then that means we're bewildered and we can't do devotional service. But if we see the opulence as the energy of Krishna, then we can engage it in new service and become purified. So I'll just stop there and see if there's any comments or questions on what we've spoken about. Any really quick? Yeah.
Did anybody help her with almond meal when you left the covered
oven? I haven't seen it. Oh, no, I mean, just find a Kaddishi, I think. No, Adrian was telling me, Korma told him that would happen.
What did you mean by spiritual opulence?
Oh, like, you know, when we come to Krishna consciousness, then Krishna gives us so much, you know, he reciprocates with whatever steps we take toward us. And so he can give us so much in the form of, you know, the association of devotees. Especially here in Melbourne, we have a very large congregation. And the opportunity to chant every day at a set time, or you know, Maha Prasadam. The devotee's conception of opulence is different to the materialist. So if someone has a simple home but they have a nice temple or altar with deities, then they'll consider themselves much more opulent than someone who's wealthy. So, yeah, basically it's an opportunity to engage in service and associate with devotees and have kirtan. This is all spiritual things. anything? Yes, Guru.
Yes, Guru. Have you heard of Ambarish Ford?
Ambarish Ford, the son of Henry Ford? The son or grandson?
Grandson. Ambarish Ford.
Yeah. Heading up.
Prabhupada's
son. Yeah, heading up the. Or playing a significant role in the planetarium project.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, this is the example of using opulence in the service of Krishna. Yeah. And in history there are also many examples of very wealthy people, kings and just industrialists who would God-conscious, who would use their wealth to propagate God consciousness in society. We need people like this. That's the business of the Vaishyas, to supply the needs of the society. So he contrived Shima Bhagavatam ki.
Shila
Prabhupada ki. Jagor Vimandi.